What is going on, 1 week season fam? JM to win here. It's Friday evening. Welcome to the week 9 Angles podcast. Before we get started, I got to tell you, I'm in a pretty good mood today. And I guess if you've been reading me long enough, hanging out with me long enough, I'm typically in a pretty good mood. And that's kind of funny because, I don't know, 15 years ago, I would have been one of the more negative people you knew. But at some point, about 15 years ago, I kind of decided that that wasn't, probably wasn't the best way to go through life and started working on shifting that. So I'm typically in a pretty good mood and certainly pretty steady emotionally. But last week, and I've carried this over to this week, I kind of adjusted my process a little bit to where I started hammering out a lot of the heavy lifting on the player grid on Thursday night, early Friday morning. And so now that's all out of the way. And so the first, you know, half of the week, all the heavy lifting of research and writing the NFL Edge and kind of forming the player grid and doing most of the writing on that is done. And that kind of gives me 3.5 days that are more geared toward podcasts and building rosters and watching a lot of football games. So almost feels like a little miniature vacation in the midst of the week, in the midst of football season. Not that I don't enjoy writing and researching the NFL Edge, but certainly something to be said for the relaxing elements of the other portions of the week. And so, yeah, this starts my 3.5 day midweek vacation, doing one of my favorite things, doing this podcast with you guys. And I think one of the big benefits that I noticed last week and I'm already seeing again this week is we talk on the site about we talk a lot on the site about roster construction. We talk about DFS being less scientific and a little bit more of an art form, as in there's only so far that all of the data can take you, because at some point it becomes a fine line and you end up with several good players. And if you get too scientific about it, you start worrying too much about very small things that only make a player, you know, a 3% better player, 5% better play than another player. And you get so fine with crossing guys off of your list because of one negative data point, or, you know, harping on one guy because of one positive data point. And you end up thinking just a lot like the rest of the field and building rosters a lot like the rest of the field and really putting yourself in very little position for success. And that's why we spend so much time on the site talking about roster construction as opposed to just digging into the research. It's also why we have the DFS process course. Reminder for any of you who've been planning to pick that up, price goes up on that on Monday. So $14 still until then. But we spend a lot of time talking about roster construction and the elements that go into that outside of just strictly research and scientific thinking. And so ending the player grid and the heavy, more scientific type work a little bit earlier has kind of cleared my mind to have more time in the week to focus on the roster construction side of things and really dig into that and see what comes up. And so that's great because, you know, kind of see some stuff on Friday and then some more stuff on Saturday that I can drop into the player grid that can help all of us kind of be a little bit better prepared for the weekend with that extra time in the week for me to think through those things. So it's been fun to see that, and excited for this week, another week of, you know, digging in today, tomorrow, early Sunday morning, and seeing what we come up with. Another thought on that before we dive into this week's podcast. I was on the site last night, and, you know, I do all the research, write the NFL Edge, or talked about this. It's just a lot of the information, new information I pick up while researching and writing it is almost in the brain one way and out another, because everything's so fast to get everything done on time. So I go back on Thursday night and I read the NFL Edge and kind of make my notes from there and start formulating my player pool and start working on rosters again for the first time since Monday. And I was doing that last night and just thinking, I really love this site. And I don't just mean running the site. I don't really love running the site. I enjoy doing the NFL Edge. I enjoy doing that side of things and obviously really enjoy these days. Running the site is not that much fun. But I really love the site as a whole, as a community, as the tools and stuff that we have on the site, but also the stuff that's coming into OWS Collective each week. So part of my process on Thursday night is I read through the NFL Edge, make my notes, and then go read through OWS Collective to see if there's anything that I missed in the research or any extra data points that I want to incorporate into my own thoughts, and then kind of adjust my notes from there. And then I use that to, build the player grid and start formulating my thoughts for my rosters from that point forward. And it's just really cool to see some of the stuff that's coming together on the site and the ways that other people are pitching in and some of the research that's being produced. And yeah, I just wanted to say thanks for everybody who's been hanging out the last year and a half or the last 6 months or 3 months or whatever. And obviously we're always looking to keep improving the site. I have a lot of ideas for next year. We're going to keep adding things, expanding, but yeah, just having a lot of fun with it and want to say thanks to all of you for hanging out and making the site, what it is. Couple final things before we get to our bottom-up build. One, Cubs fan is going to get together that NBA course. I'm working with him on that. We're going to hopefully get that up by the time that the Angles email goes out in week 11. So it'd be Tuesday of week 11. So keep an eye out for that then. Obviously, we'd like to get it out sooner, but NBA season is long and there's a lot going on during football season. So for any of you who missed it, Cubs fan picked up $100,000 wins on back-to-back nights in NBA. $100,000 one night, $130,000 the next. And the first night he did it with $24 in entry fees. So as I said to my buddy Pat, you don't even need a bankroll for that. You could work at McDonald's and spend $24 in entry fees. And that's just really impressive. And so a couple notes on that. One, obviously, not everybody is going to pick up 100K in winnings on back-to-back nights. But two, there are certain elements that Cubs fan is looking at that are putting him in position for that. And so I really liked what he said when he and I were talking about those wins. And he said, yeah, it was crazy, crazy lucky and sharp. And that's kind of the key. And so if you have been playing large field NBA play and you're trying to find the answers on how to put yourself in position to have those crazy lucky nights more frequently, because so again, the first night on the $24 in entry fees, there were 70,000 entries and he won first place with three entries. So that takes a lot of things going really well, but you also can't do that just throwing darts and guessing. I remember when I tried to do NBA, I think I went 40 slates, tournament slates, and cashed like twice and didn't have any top 10% finishes before I realized, you know what, I don't even like this sport and I'm putting in so much less time and effort than I do in other sports, and I'm probably not going to get good at this unless I focus on it, and I'm not going to focus on it. But it's easy to play a sport, and I was researching and trying to learn it. I wasn't as dedicated as I've been in NFL and MLB, obviously. But it's easy to be playing a sport and just not be putting yourself in position to even win. And so the cool thing about a course like this is we can kind of walk through what other people are overlooking and what other people are missing. So along those lines, a couple things. You know, the things that Cubs fan looks at are somewhat basic, but we want to make sure that we're not overlooking the questions that people are going to have on this. So we're opening up the course to questions. And the best way to drop questions to us is use the email us button on your profile page. Send us an email and please use the subject line NBA course question. That will make it easy for us to sort through the questions, find the questions, and make sure that we're covering as many of those as we can in the course. So again, if you're playing cash games in NBA, or if you're focusing on smaller field, single entry play, no need to drop questions. This won't be a course for you, but this is going to be geared toward essentially, we were going to do it audio form originally, we're going to do it written instead. And so I'm going to help Cubs fan with the writing so we can get it done as quickly as possible. And he's going to hammer out answers to all the questions, and we'll get this up at the start of week 11. So if you are interested in playing large field play and you're trying to figure out what are these steps to take to put yourself in position for these first place finishes, what are the things you should be looking for to put yourself in position for these first place finishes? A guy who picked up $230,000, $220,000 in profit on across two nights is probably going to have some good tips for you in getting that done. So if you have questions, drop those in. We're going to start working on that probably next Tuesday or Wednesday. So get those in over the next few days. And we'll sort through those and kind of condense them and answer as many of those as we are able to. All right. Week 9. First thing I want to talk about before we get to the bottom-up build is know your pricing. So the first thing I mean on this, and we're obviously going to be talking primarily about DraftKings and fantasy draft pricing here, and we'll focus on actual dollar values for DraftKings because fantasy draft pricing is so similar, which, by the way, Fantasy Draft Survivor Contest is about half full, so still a lot of time to get in there. It is, the links are all throughout the NFL Edge. But come compete against the OWS fam. It's going to be 5 weeks, top 71% move on this week. So I don't know. We did two of these last year, and they were just a lot of fun to kind of cut down week to week. I got both of my entries knocked out in week one the first time through, and then made it to week five with both my entries the second time through, which is week five is the money round. So just a lot of fun to have a five-week contest, $5 entry fee, so low stakes, and compete against the one-week season fam. So yeah, links are throughout the player grid, or throughout the NFL Edge. But FanDuel, you know, as we talked about in the NFL Edge this week, you're kind of looking to build an all-star team. I've gotten back to playing on FanDuel this year, which I kind of wanted to do that because of, you know, we do have FanDuel players, and I want to make sure that my thoughts are as sharp on there as on DraftKings for any kind of research-driven advice and whatnot. And so I've played, I don't know, 3-4 weeks on FanDuel this year. I've actually played some showdown slates on there as well. And again, on FanDuel, you're optimally looking to build somewhat of an all-star team just because you can usually find a couple really underpriced plays that are strong plays. And then the high-priced guys are not as high-priced as they are on other sites. So someone like Dalvin Cook being the equivalent of a DraftKings price of $7,500 compared to what he costs in the salary cap, you know, the lowest-priced guys are more expensive on FanDuel, so it's not quite as easy to fit, you know, a $7,500 salary, quote-unquote, as it is on DraftKings. But Dalvin Cook is so valuable when you can look at him on DraftKings and say, guy, he's 9,500, but I still want to find a way to fit him. Well, think about if he's only 7,500, if he costs that compared to the salary cap. And so when you look at things that way, Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, it's difficult to justify not finding ways to get to those guys on FanDuel. And so FanDuel, you're trying to find a way to build an all-star team. DraftKings, obviously, it's going to be tighter pricing. And this week in particular, prices are up And so you can look across the board, a lot of players just have their highest price of the season. And we kind of reached that point in this season where DraftKings gradually moves up pricing on players until those players run into a difficult matchup, or until those players prove that it's time for their prices to go down. Ownership also plays a factor in DraftKings pricing. And so we have guys like Travis Kelce, who, as noted this week, really only has one, I think he has one game of 26 DraftKings points. And every other game this year, he has proven that he should be priced at about 5K, 5,200, because that's how he's been scoring. He's rarely going over 15 points. And he's in that 13, 14, 15 point range every week. And that would typically be about a 5K, 5,500 guy. But because ownership's so high on Kelce, they've just kept his price up there. And because he's part of this Chiefs offense, they've just kept his price up there. So we've got Christian McCaffrey at 10K, Dalvin Cook at 9.5K, Tyler Lockett at 7.5K, and the list goes on and on. I actually, on Sunday night, built kind of a ghost team, thinking through the matchups, and you know, pricing hadn't come out yet. And I was thinking through the matchups, and I listed out this team: Russell Wilson, Dalvin Cook, Le'Veon Bell, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Tyler Lockett, Herndon, Devontae Parker, and defense special teams. And then I put what I estimated the prices would be on these guys. And so I put Russ at 7.2K, which just about nailed where he's at. I put Mike Evans at 7.1, Chris Godwin at 7.3, which just about nailed where those guys are at. I put Le'Veon at 7.6K just because it seemed like DraftKings would price him up. He ended up at 7.7K. And I put Devontae Parker at 4.2K, and he's at 4.4K. So you can generally tell about where a player is going to be priced if you – this is one reason why I encourage you guys to always look at rosters, look at ownership predictions every week, sort that live contest tab on DraftKings, go to high-dollar tournaments, see what people are doing in there. Because you start to get a feel for where ownership goes from week to week, what good roster constructions are, what bad roster constructions are. But also you just – and building rosters throughout the week, you get a sense for where players are priced and why. And so you look at how closely we nailed – or I, you know, have these players nailed on this list. And then I had Dalvin Cook at 8.5K, and he's 9.5K. And I had Tyler Lockett at 6.9K, and he's 7.5K. And that's kind of the sort of week it is that I was already putting prices higher on all these guys than they had been, because you expect DraftKings to keep gradually bumping them up. And the prices on a lot of these guys ended up even higher than that. And so know your pricing. Understand that this is a week in which players are priced higher than normal. On top of that, this is a week in which there are a few guys who have a very clear shot at 30 to 40 points. And they're all expensive, or almost all expensive. And with pricing being tight and six games this week with an over-under of 43 or below, and only 10 games on the slate, there aren't a ton of plays to just absolutely fall in love with. There aren't a ton of really strong mid-range plays. And it's just important to be aware of these things on this week. It's important to realize that the rosters that are going to win this week are going to have the very few players who score 30 to 40 points. And so there are some guys in the mid-ranges that things could go well for them and they could hit those types of numbers. Melvin Gordon, Robbie Anderson, guys like that who can get you 30-plus points and are cheaper. But generally speaking, as a whole, there's just a few guys who really pop off the page. And it's going to be valuable to make sure you find your way to at least a couple of those guys. So this week, we'll see it in the player grid, but Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. And if Devontae Adams misses, which he appears now unlikely to miss, Aaron Jones is also in this group. And even if Devontae plays, Aaron Jones has a shot to be in this group. All of these guys have a strong shot at 30 plus points. And realistically, Dalvin Cook probably gets there, and Christian McCaffrey probably gets there, and one of Mike Evans and Chris Godwin probably gets there. And so that's, you know, three spots where you're probably getting 30 points. You know, if things go poorly, you're probably getting 25. All of these guys have a shot at 40 points. And so these are important players to be thinking about in your builds this week. The other way to look at this, with not a lot to love in the mid ranges and not a lot of games and a lot of low totals and a few players who really stand out, pricing tight. Another way to look at this is, you know, so the first way is just say, identify the guys who can get you a high score. And don't waste a lot of time on these guys. A lot of people are going to waste time this week on guys who can get you a good score, who can get you 15 to 20 points. And unless one of these really chalky 15 to 20 point player, it's like last week when Chris Carson and Leonard Fournette were two of the highest owned running backs at 7K and 7.8K. And it was like, yeah, they're both good plays this week. But at their prices, they both need to get you close to 30. And the chances of either of them getting you close to 30 were really low. And so from just a raw points perspective, sure, they were fine, but you're limiting so much upside by spending salary that way because you're probably not getting more than 20, 22, 23 points, and you might be getting about 15. So if people are loading up on those types of plays this week, which is what a lot of this slate offers, there's a lot of solid plays. So if people are loading up on those solid plays that can get them 15 to 20 points, unless a couple of those solid, chalky plays just happen to hit for a big game, scoring going to be a little bit lower this week. Low over-unders, only 10 games, tighter pricing, right? Scoring is going to be a little bit lower this week. So sure, if one of these chalky guys who's really just in line for a solid game, if one of these guys happens to go for 30 points and 30% of the field has that guy, then sure, that raises, you know, the score that you need. But the likeliest scenario this week is that we get a lot of kind of just solid scores, and, you know, people who are mostly on chalk are going to get five or six solid scores and two or three random duds. And that's about where the field is going to be. So if you can outmaneuver by either saying, look, I'm going to find a way to prioritize these really high scoring guys, or I'm going to find a way to capture more upside than the field is capturing, that's going to be your best path to winning tournaments this week. So the way to capture more upside than other, or capturing the other way to approach this, is to think about game stacks and game scenarios, game environments, and try to figure out some of the places where you really want to focus on that. So for me, my list in this area is the Jets and Dolphins. I think that that's an attractive game stack. I like the idea of trying to get that game stack with Buccaneers players on it, Buccaneers receivers on it. The Chargers passing attack has an outside shot at posting a really nice game. Again, we're expecting them to be more run heavy this week, but especially if you go with some Chargers pieces opposite Green Bay pieces, it's an attractive way to go. The Lions passing attack and stacking it multiple ways. And so the Lions passing attack is not, it's good to make this clear, they are not the Buccaneers passing attack. And you can look at combined totals for Jameis, Evans, and Godwin versus combined totals for Stafford, Galladay, and Marvin Jones. You could look at isolated outputs from Jameis and his best. I mean, those numbers we laid out in the Bucks write-up this week, pretty stunning of what the best receiver between Evans and Godwin have produced this year. You know, if you could have guessed right each week, like we said, you essentially got Christian McCaffrey, and Christian McCaffrey has essentially been, you know, one of the five best fantasy plays in history, one of the five best PPR fantasy plays in history to this point in the season. So think about if you could have gotten Christian McCaffrey plus the top scoring Bucs receiver on your roster each week, you're essentially getting two of the top five or six historical PPR fantasy plays ever on a week-to-week basis. That's how the Bucs receivers have been producing if you can get it right. And so again, taking the top score from Galladay, Marvin Jones has not produced what taking the top score from Evans and Godwin has produced. It's just the nature of how these offenses are run. The Buccaneers are so aggressive, whereas the Lions are a little, they're built around being aggressive downfield, but they're a little more refined in their approach, a little more scientific in their approach, and not just out there, you know, slinging the ball around the field. So that's another stack that I like. It's not one that I'm prioritizing over the Bucs because likely scenarios have, you know, one of the Bucs players emerging with the highest score out of, you know, say these four wide receivers. But I think that stacking this Lions attack in multiple different ways, and that also includes in large field play, saying, okay, do I expect Hawkinson to have a big game? No. But what are some ways that this game could play out that I could capture some of the exposure here that other people just won't have? And so getting some Hawkinson or even some Ty Johnson and saying, okay, maybe the Lions go back to Ty Johnson as the core piece and maybe he's involved in the passing attack. Just different ways in large field play to take advantage of a good spot with the Lions passing attack. And then Bucks stacks, obviously, and adding Russell Wilson to the other side of it. You could add Tyler Lockett in large field play. I will add some Tyler Lockett. In smaller field, I won't, just because he needs about 30 points and he's unlikely to get there. And then even if he gets there, you're not missing out. You know, if you're getting those 30 points from these other high price guys you're paying for. So if I'm missing out on Lockett because I'm trying to get one of the Bucks or because I'm trying to get McCaffrey and Dalvin Cook together, I'm okay with that. If I'm missing out on Lockett because I'm trying to guess on some other random wide receiver, then no. But on my core builds, Lockett's not in there just because he's so much less likely to score those 30 points. And you can actually get, you know, for example, Evans, Godwin, and Russ, and you're still getting that Lockett upside without having to tie yourself to that salary on Lockett. So that's kind of how I'm playing that. But large field, I will have some Lockett because, again, Lockett can go for 35. And we just want to get exposure to the places where we have big upside. This is actually going to replace the kind of game-by-game angles that we go through at the end, because with 10 games and with so many low totals, this is kind of the way I'm seeing to approach this slate. Is instead of saying, all right, let me pay attention to each game and see where I could capture some upside, I've gone through all these games numerous times, and just from the extent to which the field will still kind of have some ownership in these other games against the likelihood of some of these other games producing, you know, the highest score on the slate and a bunch of fantasy goodness, the chances of that are just really low. And so it's sets up plus EV this week to really focus on the best spots and recognize that the field is likely to be kind of on these solid but unspectacular scores. And by targeting more upside than the field, we really have a shot to gain a big edge this week. So a few other guys I noted that are not really going to be in the player grid, but I want to still mention here are cheap players who have outside potential to get you 30 points. Taylor Gabriel and Anthony Miller are both guys that I've marked down there. Maybe plays, as in guys that if you're building for large field and you're wanting to incorporate extra pieces, David Montgomery on the Bears is viable in this discussion. Deontay Johnson on the Steelers is viable in this discussion. Mike Williams is viable in this discussion. John Brown's viable in this discussion. Curtis Samuel's viable in this discussion. And you could obviously look to other guys. Those are the guys that I have marked down. But there are other guys on the slate who could, you know, get you 30 points. But to me, that's kind of where my focus is this week, is how can I get to, you know, three of these high-priced guys that I really, really like? And you can actually get to four of them. You can get to McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, but you have to go really cheap elsewhere. And more than likely, that's not going to be the most plus EV way to go. I'll probably throw in one roster, just see what happens. But the most plus EV is going to be getting two or three of these high-end guys. And then elsewhere on your roster, try to find, you know, 20 to 30 point scores instead of just taking solid scores. So that brings us to our bottom-up build. For any of you who are new to the Angles podcast, which is very few of you, you've probably stopped listening by now. But if you're new and you've made it this far, we do a bottom-up build, which is where we are looking for the best values on the slate. And we're not just looking for guys who we can stomach. We're not just looking for guys who could hopefully get us 12 to 15 points, hopefully multiply their salary. Generally speaking, we're looking for the most expensive guys that we feel can get us 4X, the most expensive guys that we feel can keep us on a tournament winning pace. And I hear, you know, people say to me sometimes on Twitter or emails, especially new subscribers or newish subscribers, that they've never cracked 200 points. And so if you're in that boat, one thing I would say to you is, how often are you calculating your path to 200 points? Are you just building a roster and saying, okay, this is a good roster, it has good players? Or are you going through that roster and saying, can I get to 200 points with this? Can I get to 240 points with this roster? What would it take for me to get to 240 points with this roster? Because in smaller field tournaments, people are sharp enough these days that you still need, you know, 185 to 200 points most weeks to get first place. And in large field play, you need 220, 230, 240 most weeks to get first place. And so leave yourself clear paths to 200 points. After you build your roster, go through and say, am I actually opening paths to 200 points? And you might find that you have what a lot of people do. You know, a lot of our competition has two guys, three guys on their roster that can get them 12 to 15 points. And the chances of those players getting them 25 or 30 are extraordinarily slim. And so it's like, yeah, well, I got these guys because they allow me to pay up for these other guys who get me 30. But if you have three guys who get you 12 to 15 and you're sitting at 40 points from those three guys, and then you have a defense special teams on top of that, that, you know, you really can't bank on more than 10 points there. That's 50 points from four players on your roster. So now you have five spots left to try to get 150 to 190 points. And so you need each of these remaining five players to get you 30 points, to get you up to 200. Oh, and you need nothing to go wrong along the way, you know, and then to get to 240, it's almost impossible. So you kind of, you know, you can't just load up on all value plays that can get you 12 to 15 points. You need some guys who have upside. And so kind of look through your roster and say, can I actually get to 200, 250 points with this roster? And as we've talked about recently, embrace some of that uncertainty. Oh, I thought this was really cool. Sean Dahl, who, if you haven't seen it yet, in DFS 201, we put up his, what he labeled his OWS playbook. He's kind of collected all the write-ups and a lot of the podcast stuff and chat pod stuff into a single 18-page PDF document for himself to just kind of keep it condensed and organized. And so obviously it was organized for the way his mind works. So it's not going to be, you know, perfectly organized for you the way that you would maybe organize it yourself, but it's really cool to be able to just go and look and see everything that we talk about on the site kind of condensed into one space. But anyhow, Sean sent an email this last week and said that he took that embracing uncertainty talk to heart, and he built two rosters this last week. Sean, I hope you don't mind me. I realize I'm talking about this with you by name. I'm sure you don't mind it, but anyhow, and so, so Sean said that he used to, you know, kind of his safer, less risk embracing roster as his main roster and entered the other one into a lower dollar tournament just to see how it would do. And one of the rosters, the less risk-embracing roster, did really poorly. And the risk-embracing roster put up, I think it was 211 points. And he said he printed off both rosters or both contests as a reminder to himself to embrace some of that risk. So again, when we talk about bankroll building tournaments and smaller field tournaments, we talk about floor and ceiling because there's no need in those tournaments to take on these crazy dart throw plays with no floor that wreck your roster when they miss. The beautiful thing about bankroll building tournaments, smaller field and single entry tournaments, is even if a couple guys on your roster miss, two, three guys on your roster miss, you can still typically be in position to cash because you just have enough people in those contests building bad small field tournament rosters. And so if you take that really sharp approach, you can give yourself a path to first place while still giving yourself a path to cashing, even if things miss. But if you have to sacrifice one of those things, the thing to sacrifice is that shot at still cashing even if you miss. And I think that a lot of times, because as humans, human nature, we're a little bit less risk embracing, the tendency, if we have to make a sacrifice, is to sacrifice some of the ceiling and embrace the certainty a little bit more. And so we end up, with people saying, hey, I keep having really good rosters, but I keep just missing the cash line in tournaments. I keep finishing 3, 4, 5 points out of the money, or only 1, 2, 3 points into the money, and finishing right there at that sort of 18 to 25% range of the tournament contest. I'm obviously building sharp rosters because I keep being right there, but what am I doing wrong? That's typically the answer, is there's just a couple spots where you're embracing too much certainty instead of embracing a little more uncertainty. If you have to sacrifice one thing, sacrifice the certainty, because you're playing in a tournament. You're playing to win first place. You're playing to get 200 plus points. So if you look at your roster and you say, yeah, the floor is high, but I don't think I can get to 200 points here, change a couple things and try to give yourself that path to 200 points. A lot of that stuff we talk about, a lot of that is stuff you already know, but good stuff to recap. And again, it's kind of the idea behind what we're looking for in the bottom-up build, is players who can actually keep us on pace for winning a tournament. Value plays that actually have a shot to keep us on pace for winning a tournament. So interestingly, there is a decent amount of quality value this week. There's a decent amount of value this week that I wouldn't hate finding on my roster. And in fact, I'm kind of excited. I haven't played, I talked in the DFS process course that one of the things I think is important is to have a goal of how much money you want to make in a season, or, in a set of games or whatever, because it kind of tailors your approach to what types of contests you're entering and why you're focusing on those contests and how you're building for those contests. And it kind of keeps your mind a little bit sharper because you're thinking about first place in those contests. And so, I talked about that this year, my goal is to pick up about 40K in DFS. And then I realized kind of after setting that goal that it was like, well, a lot of the contests I'm in that could get me 40K, I might as well enter one or two additional contests, because if I got first place in these ones, I'll also get first place in these ones. I could pick up about 100K on a weekend. So that's kind of how I'm gearing my play the rest of the way, is toward that specific goal. But another goal that I have this year, and I just kind of started on this last week, is I'd really like to win the Wildcat this year, which is the $333 contest on DraftKings. It's usually about 5,000 entries. And because I'm typically building for 300, 500, 700 entry contests, I've never really focused too heavily on the Wildcat. And I've had a few really nice finishes in there. I had a fifth place finish one time, and it's usually about 250K to first place in the Wildcat. And so it's a nice tournament to play because, the field isn't huge. The payout structure is decent. First place prize is really big for the buy-in level. But again, I've never focused too heavily on it. And last week was a week in which, and I've focused less heavily on it since running the site, because, or even since I really expanded the NFL Edge a couple years ago, because it's just a lot more work in the week. But last week was just a week that set up really well for the Wildcat. And so I built 19 rosters in there, and started thinking, you know, if I start focusing on this contest, I have a decent shot over, you know, the next 1, 2, 3 years of taking down first place, putting in about, you know, 20 entries a week, which 20 entries a week would be about a 1 in 200 shot at taking down first place, 1 in 200, 1 in 250 based on the size of the contest in a given week. And thinking, you know, across 3 seasons, about 51 slates, with the edge that we have with research and roster construction, thinking there's a pretty solid bet that I can take that down over the next 3 years. And so started focusing on that a little bit last week, and I expect to focus on that again this week. And that's kind of, you know, pushed me back into thinking a little more about large field play. And in thinking through that this week, it's a, just a great week for large field play in general. And I'm actually going to get back, you know, I think last week I put in about 35 millimaker rosters, and it's the first time I put in more than, you know, 5-10 just random toss them away rosters since the beginning of the season, early in the season. But this is a really solid week just for contests like that. Maybe the slant, the millimaker, the wildcat, larger field contests where you really need to aim for first place, because there are these upside pieces. But then there are a lot of kind of ways you can mix and match, or I should say these high-priced upside pieces. There are a lot of ways you can mix and match salary at the lower ends to expose yourself to upside. So enough talk. We've talked about a lot of really valuable things, but we're 45 minutes in and have not started the bottom-up build. So some of you, this is specifically what you come here for. So let's get started. I don't think we'll take too long on this week because it's pretty straightforward, and we've already kind of closed out all the angles that we would otherwise be hitting at the end. Quarterback is just, to me, really straightforward for savings and trying to grab yourself upside. So if you're going to say, let go of floor concerns a little bit and try to win a tournament, and you're going to save money at quarterback, the guy who stands out the most to me is Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick is 4,800. We talked to the NFL Edge about the way the Dolphins run this offense, how aggressive they are. Tremaine Johnson is now expected to miss this week for the Jets. Not that Tremaine Johnson has been a great cornerback, but just another ding for the Jets' poor secondary. And the things working against Ryan Fitzpatrick are that he's a bit erratic, and the Dolphins don't have a good offensive line, and their wide receivers are pretty raw, even though Devontae Parker is in, what, his fifth season. He's still a raw receiver. Preston Williams is a raw rookie. You know, this isn't like a lock and load play. But when we're looking at going through the slate, you're saying, okay, who can get me 25 to 30 points? Who can get me 25 to 30 points? Ryan Fitzpatrick really stands out at only 4,800. So lots of other places you can go at quarterback this week. Russell Wilson is a strong play. Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford, Jameis Winston, you can even say Sam Darnold, guys that we're going to get to in the player grid. But if you're looking at saving salary and giving yourself a shot at 25-plus points, Ryan Fitzpatrick stands out. Ryan Fitzpatrick will be in the player grid. There's a player who won't be in the player grid that I also want to mention, and that is Philip Rivers, who is just really underpriced at 5,100. And Philip Rivers on the year, 27.9 points in week one, then down to 11.9 in week two, then 23.8, 23.4, another dud, 20.8, 24.2, another dud. So the duds are mixed in there, but at 5,100 against a Green Bay defense, against a Green Bay team that's going to score points, and a Green Bay defense that hasn't been that good since, what, week two, Philip Rivers is, I think, a really solid bet as well at 5,100. So he will not be in the player grid because try to limit it, and he's not a guy I'm super focused on in my tighter builds. And we should expect the Chargers to lean on the run this week because that's what Anthony Lynn wants to do. But Philip Rivers should still be able to get you 17, 18, 19 points, and it's not as if he can't get you 25 to 30. So Philip Rivers is right there in the discussion as well. I will have some large field exposure to Phillip Rivers this week. And I like Ryan Fitzpatrick as a guy who just, you know, you probably get 15 to 18 points, but you have a clear shot at 25 to 30 in this matchup, in a game that could start going back and forth. And with the way that the Dolphins attack downfield on offense, that kind of swings us over to, I guess, like, there's a few places that I could swing us over to. So I'm going to swing over first to, we mentioned the Chargers running the ball, and this is not a play that I want to roster, but it is a play that when I just said that about lots of ways to mix and match this slate, he's a guy who stands out, and that's Melvin Gordon. So Melvin Gordon will not be on a core build of mine because James Conner is doubtful and Dalvin Cook and Christian McCaffrey are up there. And so Melvin Gordon is obviously like third priority at running back, and there's just a lot of other things I would want to do in the flex spot. Other running backs I would want to go to or other values that I would want to take. But Melvin Gordon behind what's been an atrocious offensive line in a decent matchup against the Packers run defense that's gotten better, but that's still attackable. Melvin Gordon, you know, last year he was one of those guys that I was always a little bit scared to roster at his elevated price because I'm such a volume guy. And most people, because most people aren't paying attention to volume, most people were kind of consistently overlooking the fact, looking at Melvin Gordon's production and overlooking the fact that, hey, this guy a lot of times is seeing 17 touches, 18 touches, 20 touches, 21 touches, and was priced up there with the highest priced running backs because he was scoring so many touchdowns and the role for this offense kept him involved in the pass game with room to work downfield. And, you know, kept him, you know, picking up yardage throughout the game and having multiple scoring opportunities each week. In fact, if we go back, if I remember correctly, Gordon had the most touches inside the 10 last year among running backs. If not, he was close to the top. Whereas this year, Gordon just, I mean, the line's been bad and Gordon hasn't been able to self-create and they haven't been using him as well in the passing game and the touchdown opportunities just haven't been there. But we talked a couple weeks ago about that one-week excitement spike that we sometimes see when a situation changes. We talked about that with Ryan Tannehill, and he had that really solid first game and supported A.J. Brown and Corey Davis in that game, unlike last week. Where Tannehill, by the way, still played really well last week. But this is kind of a similar situation. You know, Daniel Jones had his excitement spike in his first start. There was Adrian Peterson. I mean, it was against the Dolphins, but Adrian Peterson had his biggest game once the coaching change happened in Washington. And this coaching change was made so that the Chargers could get their run game going. Anthony Lynn was an NFL running back. Anthony Lynn was a running backs coach for most of his coaching career. Anthony Lynn has said that good teams don't pass the ball. Winning teams don't pass the ball all over the yard. He wants to establish the run, and that's going to start with Melvin Gordon. So Melvin Gordon at only 5K is just a really interesting play. And as I'm saying all of this, you know, honestly, maybe he will end up on my main build. I don't want him there because of the amount of uncertainty we are embracing. Melvin Gordon this year has topped 10 fantasy points once on DraftKings, and that was 11.4 points last week. He has not topped 32 rushing yards. He has topped 10 receiving yards only once. He has only 2 touchdowns in 4 games. But a typical Melvin Gordon game last year, you're getting, you know, 4 catches for 40 yards. You're getting 1 or 2 touchdowns. You're getting another 60, 70 yards on the ground. If we get one of those games at only 5K, you're just in tremendous shape. So I think that Melvin Gordon is kind of like David Montgomery last week, except that Melvin Gordon still has Austin Eckler behind him. So Montgomery, everything pointed to Montgomery last week, enough so that I pulled the trigger on a few Wildcat rosters. But there was enough uncertainty that I couldn't quite embrace him on my main build. And Gordon kind of looks similar this week. I'll definitely have some of him, I'm a little scared to embrace him on my main build, but maybe that means I should. Maybe that means you should balance that against one of the things I talk about is it's valuable, and I'm very open with what my shortcomings are as a player or my blind spots are as a player. And I think it's important, since you're consuming information from me on this site, for you to be aware of my blind spots, because that enables you to get the most out of the research. It's the same reason that Cubs fan can use the NFL edge as 90 or 95% of his research and consistently dominate in NFL tournaments using plays that I'm not on. And so he's using my research and ending up on plays that I'm not on. And so, again, I mean, some of this is fluky, but last week I had Godwin on my main team and Mike Evans went off 2 weeks ago. It was Galladay and Marvin Jones went off 3 weeks ago. It was Thielen and Diggs went off. Some of that, again, is very fluky. And, you know, basically recognize we are always, almost always, 90% of the time, with the way we approach research, we are going to be able to isolate the spots that are going to produce good scores. But just because I'm on one particular player from that spot, or a little nervous about a player like Melvin Gordon, David Montgomery last week, doesn't mean you should necessarily side with me 100% on those things. Recognize the places where I'm a little less risk embracing than I should be, or where, you know, I think that this wide receiver thing the last 3 weeks has just been fluky. I have not found anything I overlooked in those spots outside of, you know, we talked about Thielen and Diggs. I didn't embrace as much uncertainty as I should have with Diggs, but generally speaking, you know, these have been somewhat fluky, but just pay attention to those things and recognize that we're going to have the spots right. The research is going to be right, but you still have to get the players right in those spots. So Melvin Gordon on the list, a lot of things point to him, a lot of reasons to be slightly nervous, but you know, just has a shot to be a really sharp play this week. Obviously, Jalen Samuels, if Connor is out, Benny Snell's already out, Connor is doubtful, and just this running back role. I know that the Colts are 29th in DVOA against the run. I've seen that mentioned multiple places. Recognize that the Colts were missing Darius Leonard for most of the season, and Darius Leonard is back and is a legitimate difference maker at linebacker. But so, you know, it's not the best matchup. It's not the worst matchup. It's not as if this is the Buccaneers either. So consider it a slightly below average matchup. But again, the Colts haven't given up a lot of receiving yards to running backs this year, but their defense is set up to filter targets that direction. And just this role in this offense is so valuable. So we saw last week with Chase Edmonds what can happen when you just bet on roll. It's not guaranteed to go right. But if you bet on roll 2 weeks ago with Latavius Murray, worked out. If you bet on roll with Latavius Murray last week, it worked out. And again, this is where it's important to take a big picture view of things, right? And to really understand what we're working with in the NFL. If you'd bet on roll with the Cardinals last night against the 49ers, which was a tougher matchup than what Chase Edmonds had last week, it paid off with Kenyon Drake, a guy who'd been on the team for 3 days and didn't know the playbook. So again, betting on roll is almost always going to be the sharpest way to go. If you missed out on, if you played Chase Edmonds last week and got that whatever 3-point game, you should look at the Kenyon Drake game against the 49ers and feel extraordinarily encouraged and essentially say, look, it was a great process play. Sometimes things, crazy things just happen. In fact, it was an even better process play when Edmonds was only about 10% owned, because if he'd put up that Kenyon Drake type score, you're just opening up so much upside that other people are not gaining access to. So betting on the roll, and then especially when we take into account the price that Samuels is only 4K. You know, we said in the NFL Edge last week that Ty Johnson was a don't overthink it in cash. And then it was like, but be aware of Matt Patricia risk in tournaments. And Then by the time we got to the player grid, when I could see everything from more of a macro sense and see the whole slate with all the research done, it was like, all right, Ty Johnson's not even a don't overthink it play in cash. He's still a little bit risky across the board. You know, that was kind of like where we were at last week with Ty Johnson. This week is like, don't overthink it with Jalen Samuels in cash. And so there won't be a later amendment on this. It just doesn't make sense to not play a guy in this role at 4K who's going to be 80%+ owned. In tournaments, we're probably looking at 50% to 60% ownership in a lot of spots, especially as we, and I'm not totally clear on it, on like exactly how these numbers work out, but generally speaking, you know, what you would expect would be like 35% in the Millie Maker, 40% in the Millie Maker, and then like 60% in higher dollar contests. And that's because in the Millie Maker, you have people who are building 150 lineups and they want to hedge and they want to do all these other things. And so Samuels, you know, just has the ownership dropped as a result. But you can always make a case when a player is that highly owned for not playing them, especially when the matchup isn't perfect. But his likeliest scenario is that he gets you, you know, 18+ points and he costs 4K. So really like Jalen Samuels. He's a guy I will likely just leave as a staple piece on most of my rosters this week. Just a really great way to gain a lot of upside on a week where upside I think is going to be important because just a lot of roster constructions are going to miss out on some of that upside. So Jalen Samuels, 4K. If you're building with us, we have Ryan Fitzpatrick, we have Melvin Gordon, we have Jalen Samuels. I'm going to go back to Fitzpatrick and take two players from this Dolphins-Jets game. So I like Devontae Parker and Preston Williams. The highest score they have combined for this year is, I believe, on DraftKings and Fantasy Draft, about 29 points. They cost 8,600 combined. So to keep you on a tournament winning pace, a 200-point pace, they need about 34 points if you roster them both together. Additionally, because they are cheaper guys, you really want them to go over that 4X pace. You'd like them to be able to get to about 40 points. So if you are rostering Parker and Williams together, you are betting on them having their best combined game of the season. And about 33% better than their best combined game to date. With that said, this is a really good matchup. With that said, Josh Rosen was playing for a chunk of the season. We have Fitzpatrick back, who just helps a lot from an upside perspective. And I think that the Jets are going to put up points in this spot. The matchup is too good, and Adam Gase is too vindictive of a person to not just try to put up points against this Dolphins organization that he doesn't like. And if the Jets put up points, that means Fitzpatrick being aggressive, that means passes downfield to Parker and Williams. And last week, this is off the top of my head, I calculated this last night, so I might have it slightly wrong, but I believe last week, so Hearns and Albert Wilson, 3 targets, 2 catches, 2 touchdowns. If you gave that production to Parker and Williams, who got all the rest of the targets, so if they got the touchdowns as well, instead, I believe they would have hit about 34 or 35 points last week. And that was obviously, you know, a tougher matchup against Pittsburgh than, you know, at Pittsburgh than at home against the Jets. So there are certainly paths there to Parker and Williams putting up 40 and just being a really strong pairing with Fitzpatrick. I will definitely have rosters that have both of those guys that just have the full-on Dolphins stack. But from a core build perspective, likely a scenario perspective, I want to try to isolate one of these Dolphins receivers. That's likely the way I'll go. So for me, in isolating them, it's going to be Devontae Parker because he has, you know, the deeper A dot, not by a whole lot, but he has the more downfield role. He has the better red zone role right now. And it's just slightly likelier to have a 20-point game than Williams is. But they're both really sharp plays this week. And it's, you know, you can look through their game logs. At their prices, it's going to be difficult for them to fail. Failing would be 8 or 9 points. And both these guys are consistently getting about 12 to 16 points, which is what you need at their prices. And then the matchup's good. The game environment should be good. So I really like these wide receivers. Devontae Parker is the one that we will throw on the bottom-up build. I also said we should expect the Jets to put up points. We should expect Gase to want to put up points in this spot. Now, this is not a team that's – or probably not a team that's even capable of putting up 40 points as much as Gase would like to do that. But 4 touchdowns from the Jets is pretty reasonable. I know Vegas doesn't have them quite there, but 28 points from the Jets wouldn't be a shock. And they're going to want to attack downfield. It looks like Chris Herndon is going to miss one more week. So again, Robbie Anderson, Demaryius Thomas, Jamison Crowder. And we expect Crowder to have the short area role, Demaryius to have the intermediate role, Robbie to have the deep role. Obviously, these guys kind of, you know, Crowder slides up to some intermediate targets and Demaryius takes some short looks and Robbie takes some intermediate looks. But that's sort of the way that these roles are arranged. Bad pass rush from the Dolphins, a Jets team that wants to score. It's most likely that Crowder sees his targets go down a little bit this week, whereas Demaryius holds steady and Robbie maybe sees a slight bump. So Robbie Anderson with the downfield role is the guy I like the most if we're talking about who could get you 30 points. So I think that Crowder is viable, although he's priced so close to Robbie Anderson that I probably won't have any Crowder myself. He certainly could be the guy who puts up 25 points, but I am going to likely just make a solid bet, you know, and bet on one guy and take the downfield role of Robbie Anderson. But I think you can go either way there. And then Demaryius, he's only 4K. So he works as a salary saver, as a guy who probably gets you 12, 13, 14 points again. And if he scores a touchdown, he can get you 18 to 20. But Robbie is the guy who, you know, could go for 5 catches, 100 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So he stands out to me at 5,500 as a nice way to save salary and expose yourself to potential 430 points. Kind of reminds me this discussion of the week 1 millionaire maker win that Head Chopper had on FanDuel, where he had a lineup that didn't have a game stack and didn't have player blocks and wasn't really correlated in any way, but it was all players who could put up 30 plus points. And one of the players was DeSean Jackson. I forget who the other, maybe Marquise Brown was one of the players on that roster. And it was just guys across the board who could score from anywhere on the field. Or who had, you know, running backs with big roles. And that's always something you want to keep an eye out for, especially in large field play, is downfield wide receivers or pass-catching running backs. You know, guys who, if things break their way, they can get you 30 points. So not just saying, you know, well, Demaryius Thomas is pretty safe because he gets me at least 10 and he can get me 15 to 18, but instead saying, where can I find a slate breaker? And for me, Robbie Anderson is one of those answers. So you take on risk with his downfield role, but the upside is there, and he's a guy I want to throw onto this bottom-up build. I don't currently expect to have him on my main build, but I will certainly have him on rosters this week. And then this last wide receiver spot, as we talk about exposing yourself to guys who can get you a lot of points, I'm going to take a guy who doesn't typically fit into that discussion, and that's Danny Amendola at 4,700. And the thinking here, you know, I've already mentioned throughout the week that Stafford has always liked checking down to Theo Riddick. And 3 weeks this year out of, I think Amendola has been healthy 6 weeks this year. So 5 fully healthy games, but 3 out of 6 games this year, Amendola has gone for target counts of 13, 11, and 8. And that's just a lot of targets in a really good passing offense in a really good matchup against Oakland. And so if Amendola sees, you know, 8-plus targets again, 8, 13, 11 targets, I mean, that's a lot of targets. And, you know, Stafford has liked checking down him, and we saw last week against the Giants that it doesn't necessarily even require a strong pass rush for Stafford to take these available passes to Amendola. And in these matchups like Oakland, like the Giants, where the team doesn't do a great job forcing short area passes, Arizona was another one, Amendola moves downfield a little bit more than just like a strictly slot receiver. You know, it's a little bit more of a Julian Edelman type role right now, where he's seeing some of these catches, you know, 10, 11, 12 yards downfield, which provides him with enough upside. And so we take on a little bit of risk just because he has the lower target games as well. But again, the Lions backfield situation is murky. The matchup on the ground isn't great. The matchup through the air is great. Oakland's offense is just really well schemed and should be able to put up points. The game is in Oakland. Derek Carr does well when he has time to pass, and the Lions have a bad pass rush. So, a lot of reasons to expect Amendola to end up with 7, 8-plus targets again. And if he does, he's just a really solid play here at only 4,700. So with only one touchdown on the year, he has a DraftKings game of 26.4, a DraftKings game of 21.5, a DraftKings game of 17.5. So yes, we're not quite targeting a 30 to 35-point game, but there are only so many players who can get you that. And from a bottom-up build perspective, Amendola is a guy who, you know, if you can get 20 points from him at 4.7K, that's going to be a really strong score. There aren't, honestly, you're going to look at the end of Sunday and realize that there just weren't a lot of 20-point games available this week. And so if you can get one of them, you're putting yourself in good shape. And at only 4,700, I like Amendola as a piece on the bottom-up build. So we have three empty spaces left on this roster, and we actually have only two players left that we're going to go to, and I'll explain why in a moment. But first, defense, very straightforward. Washington, 1,800. We talked about it in the write-up for Washington and Buffalo. We'll talk about it again in the player grid of just why, you know, why they make sense this week. Now, part of the reason that they made sense was because there weren't any defenses that you looked at and said, you know what, this defense has a clear shot at a big game. And I'll tell you what, it's been, even to me, it's been somewhat remarkable how well we've done with defense this year. And I say somewhat remarkable just because I know that there is more variance on defense than we've experienced so far this season, because we've nailed defense almost every week, starting with the 49ers at 2,200 in week one. But again, it's understanding, or, you know, we've had the cheap 49ers multiple times, we've had the cheap Panthers a couple times, and then we've also had the weeks where we've said, you know what, it's really worth it to pay up for the Patriots, or there's been at least one other defense that was worth it to pay up for. Because in these spots where you have, you know, bad offense against an aggressive defense, when you can understand how a defense plays, what their mindset is, how they're schemed, you can start looking for these places where it's just like, you know what? Yeah, there's variance, the position, but I'll tell you what, last week I made it a point, even though salary was, you know, there were places where we wanted to pay up and where we wanted to free up salary. I made it a point to get the Patriots defense last week. And we've just had situations like that throughout the season, where either it's a cheap defense that really stands out for high upside, or an expensive defense, it's like, you know what, though, this defense is worth the salary because they're going to outscore most other defenses. Outside of the Bills, who now get to play Dwayne Haskins, there are no defenses that really stand out this week. And so will there be one or two defenses that put up 15 to 20 points? Probably, just because that's the nature of defensive scoring. Something will happen where a defense gets two touchdowns, or, you know, they block a punt for a touchdown and have some other fluky play, and points pile up. But as far as what you can target, you can only really go through and target 6, 7, 5, 6, 7, 8 points this week. The Panthers might be the one exception, 2,800. But if you're going to go through and target 6, 7, 8 points and just hope to get lucky for your double-digit defense special teams score, you might as well do it on the defense that costs only 1,800 and is a decent defense. And we've talked through everything. You know, they're solid against some things, and they're playing Josh Allen, and they just set up well in this spot. So you're expecting 5, 6 points. You're expecting that from most defenses this week. You're expecting to need to have things really just break your way to get a double-digit score. And so if that's the case, Washington's as likely to have something break your way as another defense. So at 1,800, I really like Washington. With Dwayne Haskins starting, obviously we should expect Washington. Is that lawnmower? My goodness. We should expect Washington to try to keep the ball on the ground as much as they can, obviously, this week with Haskins under center in a game against Buffalo. But Buffalo, even in spite of being a non-aggressive defense, they set up really well. And things would have to break their way for them to get, you know, one of these 15, 18-point games. But it would be tough for them to not pick up, you know, 9-plus points this week. So if you want to go up in salary, Buffalo makes sense. Like I said, also like the Panthers, we'll hit on them in the player grid as well. But Washington, 1,800 from a bottom-up perspective, is just a solid play. And then one of the plays I really like, now that we have the news of T.Y. Hilton missing, is Jack Doyle. And so the obvious pivot with, you know, Hilton expected to be out is Pascal, but and I almost said Blaise Pascal for any of you philosophy majors out there. Zach Pascal. One of the things you'll see with Pascal is he had 7 targets last time that Hilton missed. And he's priced at, well, I think 4,100. And you look at other players in that price range, and it's a lot of guys who have, you know, around seven targets as their expected range, you know. And with some downfield work, you have Curtis Samuel down there, you have Mike Williams down there, you have guys who you can target. You have Parker and Preston Williams for downfield roles with about seven looks. Or you have a guy like Amendola who might get you 8 to 13 targets. And so Pascal is a solid play, but I think that people will over pivot to him as the number one receiver, where he's really priced about where he should be for Hilton being out. Remember, this team still spreads the ball around. What's really interesting to me is, first off, the best way to attack Pittsburgh is with tight ends. And secondly, the last time Hilton missed, Jack Doyle saw a season-high 8 targets in week 4, and Ebron tied his season-high with 5 targets. That was also week 4. 13 combined targets between the two, if you wanted to play them as a player block that cost $6,600 in salary. They combined for 24 DraftKings points the last time Hilton missed. So at $6,600, that's really solid pace. Now, that came with each of them scoring a touchdown, but it also came with them catching only 5 passes on their 13 targets. So it kind of all evens out to where, you know, they have a clear shot at combining for 20 plus points with Hilton out. They're going to be heavily involved in the offense. I would expect 10 to 11 targets from these two guys combined. But they have upside for more looks than that. So if you think about just how you're spending salary, if you had or Darren Waller is 6,300, are you expecting to get 10 to 11 targets from him? And so obviously you take up 2 spots with Ebron and Doyle. But again, you can always – a couple things. One, you can always look at a winning tournament roster, including a 240-point roster, and there's usually one player on the roster who just didn't get it done, even on a winning tournament roster. That's very normal, very common, and very possible to win a tournament with one player not getting it done. Two, it's really hard to get strong scores at value this far down. And so if you look at Doyle and Ebron and say, you know what, I bet they could average about 12 points apiece, and from that level of salary, that's really nice. And that's higher than getting like one solid score and a dud from 6,600. You know, if you spent 4K on receiver, or I guess 3,900 on a wide receiver and 2,500 on a tight end, you know, and you hit on the wide receiver and got 30 points, 25 points, you're still getting a dud from that 2,500 tight end, you know? And so it's just hard to spend this little in salary and get exposure to that many targets and that many points. With that said, that flex spot is valuable this week, because, you know, you do have Melvin Gordon, you do have Aaron Jones, you do have Dalvin Cook, you do have Christian McCaffrey, you do have, you know, potentially want to use both Dolphins receivers and both Bucks receivers, or wanting to use a Bucks receiver and Robbie Anderson and a Dolphins receiver and another wide receiver from another spot. You know, there's just that flex spot is valuable this week. And so I probably won't end up with an Ebron and Doyle pairing myself. But Doyle, again, 8 targets last time that Hilton missed, and the matchup sets up really well. Doyle is typically a solid bet for about 8 to 12 points. And so add in the matchup, add in the fact that Hilton is expected to be out, and he's a solid bet this week at 3K and a really nice addition to the bottom-up build. So this leaves us 16.8K in salary remaining. 16.8K, which is quite a bit and provides us with quite a bit of flexibility. And it leaves us with the flex spot. This week, I'm not actually going to put another cheap player in here, however, because as we've talked about, there are some priority plays at the higher ends of the price range. And I think that people get a little too set on one roster construction approach, a little too set on, you know, with got hammered into us in 2016, the Bell and David Johnson gear to pay up at running back. And so now everybody kind of pays up at running back and finds the values, even on weeks when the high priced running backs, like last week, Fournette, Chris Carson, you're only expecting them to get you 18 to 22 points. And then you're taking bad value to enable those players. And, you know, it just kind of sets up your roster less well than going mid-tier across the board. So some weeks, especially a few recent weeks, it's just made a lot of sense to say, okay, forget moving around everything to pay up for running back. I'm going to take some of these really solid mid-tier guys. This week, the spots that these high-priced players are in are just really good. And with only 10 games and so many low-total games, the spots that these mid-tier players are in are just not that great. There's going to be a lot of 12, 15, 18, 20-point games from this mid-tier in pricing, and not a lot of 30-point games. So with some solid value that can get you 20 points and can expose you to these 30 to 40 point games up at the top, it makes a lot of sense to kind of work in such a way that you're aiming to get those high priced guys. So I'm leaving this flex spot open. We have Christian McCaffrey that we want to play. We have Dalvin Cook who we want to play. We have, if Thielen misses, honestly, Stephon Diggs is interesting. Kenny Golladay is interesting. Le'Veon Bell is interesting. Tyler Lockett is interesting. Chubb is interesting. We have Evans and Godwin who are a priority, as in you'd really like to have one of them. So just a lot of guys up here that we want to leave the salary available to go to. No reason to throw somebody in the flex here with a cheaper price, because we would just immediately move up to one of these. So kind of use this as your foundation. You've got some really good pieces down here that can give you a high floor, a path to a high ceiling, put you in position for a big weekend, and allow you to roster some of these high-end guys that can really help you win a tournament this week. So with that, I think we covered a lot of really good things this week. Really liked tonight's pod. I am going to get out of here. I'm going to go hang out with Abby and William for a bit, and then finish up the player grid, get that up on the site, record the chat pod. I will see you guys on the site throughout the weekend, and I will see you at the top of the leaderboards at the end of week 9. Drop in those questions about the NBA course. Check out the OWS playbook in DFS 201. Hop into the Fantasy Draft Survivor Contest. That's it. I'm out.